There's nothing more beautiful than being a witness to someone's life. To know them inside and out and be with them through everything, share the same memories. Memories are everything. I want that.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are bringing you the internet's most popular books and letting you know whether or not you should take your time out of your busy schedule to read them. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. And this week we have a very special episode because it's our first time diving into Abby Jimenez and her books. And we're starting off with her most recent book, Say You'll Remember Me, which follows the story of Samantha and Xavier as they navigate a long distance relationship, as they navigate parental health issues, as they navigate life and love and everything in between. And it's a romance book, so you know how it ends already, but there's a lot that goes on in between.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do you guys have reviews to read?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I have a 3.5 star review from Storygraph. It reads, "It's a perfectly good, quick summer read. I enjoyed the story for what it was, but I probably won't remember it. No pun intended."
A lot of those puns throughout the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have a one-star review from Goodreads, and it says, "The irony of Say You'll Remember Me is that I'm doing my best to forget it."
Wow. Cutting. Okay, I have several one stars because, guys, the one stars of this book are actually really funny.
Yes, you did a good job.
Yeah. Okay, so first one star. I'm convinced this book was written by someone who speed ran a romance novel checklist but forgot to actually write a romance novel. Insta love, check, but with zero chemistry. Romance tropes, present but half-hearted. Depth, nowhere to be found. Book talk slang, jabbed in like a desperate bid for internet approval. It's like, oh god. Let me see. I'm just going to read part of this one because it's long. This whole book was exactly the same. Longing, repeated analysis of the bleak situation, preoccupation with the difficulties of each partner, a meeting, separating, repeat. Also one star. This one, unfortunately, I would still be able to tell that this was written in 3 months in the notes app of her cell phone, even if Abby Jimenez herself didn't admit to doing it.
It's like she admitted that.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I'm not sure that's the flex you think it is, babe.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah. So anyway, those are my reviews.
Okay. Well, the internet says Goodreads 4.1 out of 5, Amazon 4.4 out of 5. I've been begging for us to do an Abby Jimenez, so don't break my heart. What are your ratings?
Well, I'm not going to be the one to break your heart. We'll see about Casey. I gave it 4 stars, so I'm right in line with the Goodreads reviews. I thought it was a good romance. I think I did like that there was more depth than just the romance. I did think some things were a little unrealistic and a little too broody at times, but I liked more of the side stories in the romance itself. So that's where it gets props.
I can go next. I don't think it's going to be like terrible, but also it's not going to be that good. I gave it 3 stars. I thought it was fine. I just honestly mostly thought it was boring. Like, I agree with you, Catherine. Actually, the plot with the main character's family, I thought was basically the only interesting part of the book. I essentially read for that part. The romance actually like totally missed me. I wasn't into it at all. I actually kind of wish she had just written a book about this woman's family and just not made it a rom-com. I just felt like, yeah, the romance didn't speak to me. I thought it was weak and super unrealistic and very insta-love. So I really struggled to connect with the romance. And yeah, so I read it and I was like, I think I'm going to forget every single thing I just read probably in a week. And I did. So
I feel you there. I've kind of forgotten most of this book.
Okay, well, I haven't forgotten it. I finished it yesterday. I love Abby Jimenez. I met her recently, and it was like the book tour for this book, but not. So she like talked, but didn't talk about this book because it wasn't quite out yet. And I, after hearing her like life story, like from her mouth, I'm like, wow, she poured so much of her actual self into this book compared to her other books. So I don't know if that made me like it even more, but I gave it 5 stars because I thought it was unique. It was a tough topic. You don't see insta love that often as the trope. And while it was unrealistic, like it's a fiction and it's a rom-com, like, you know, there's going to be an unrealistic happy ending. So I don't know. I thought it was unique as far as like a romance goes, and I liked it.
There you go. Okay, so it's a romance, but there's a lot of kind of weird outside stuff. Not weird, but like there's a lot of family stuff going on for the characters. Do you guys think it's more plot or character driven?
I think a romance kind of has to be character driven because it's two characters falling in love and overcoming obstacles, and that's kind of what happens, and the characters around them are dealing with a lot of stuff and put in their own 2 cents into the romance and why it's so hard. So I think character.
Yeah, I feel like the romance is actually the tension in the book, and it's like what's causing these already stressful lives these two characters are living to like be even more miserable. So I do think since it's more about their like personal lives and less about their together lives, that it is more character driven.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I honestly didn't really think this book really had much of a plot other than like occasionally they're doing long distance. So like occasionally, like most things were like interspersed between when they could actually see each other. But most of the book is just like exploring their families while, and then like the ultimate conclusion is like the characters like being together or not being together. But there's not like really like that much of a plot other than like they see each other and then they don't.
Yeah. So I said I have been pushing for an Abby Jimenez book. I have read, funny enough, 2 of the 3 Part of Your World books, and neither of them were Part of Your World. And I met her and her daughter.
Just a really quick tangent. Can you explain what the Part of Your World series is? Like, what is the basis for all of these books being part of the same?
So they're not actually like a series. They just like are 3 books where characters overlap, which is going to be the same with this book and the next 2. So in like the one I read, Yours Truly picks up with the coworker of one of the main girl in the first book. And then the next one picks up with like a friend of the love interest. So they just like, you see the other characters pop up. They all take place in like the same city and have overlapping friend groups, but not like large overlapping plots.
So very as Allie Hazelwood-esque.
Kind of, but even more like they're more present. They're not just cameos.
Hmm.
So that's why they're like a trilogy, but they're not a trilogy. You can read them standalone, and this will be the same with these.
Okay. So it sounds like you have already read books by the author.
Yes, that was the question I was starting to answer before your question. And so I have read books, other books by Abby Jimenez, and I will continue to read books by Abby Jimenez. So what about you guys?
This is my first, but I've been wanting to read Just for the Summer, which I'm guessing is part of that series you were talking about.
It's the third one in the Part of Your World kind of
trio. I've it's been on my TBR. I've just never gotten to it. Yeah, I liked her writing. I think she's more unique romance writer than like just traditional romance where it just focuses on the romance. I think that's why I like Emily Henry a lot. She has a similar thing where it's not just the romance, it's the people surrounding the 2 romantic leads and why that life still goes on outside of a romance. And I think I really enjoy that more than just reading kind of like unrealistic romances. So yeah, I'll continue reading more Abby Jimenez. So we'll see.
Yeah, romance just isn't my genre. I thought it was fine. But I wouldn't have read it unless it was for the podcast, and I have no desire to read more. But it was fine.
You don't hate the author like you do Allie Hazelwood.
No, no. No author has earned my ire like Allie Hazelwood. So
I will say Abby Jimenez is like Emily Henry in that she deals with like real world problems. Like one of the reasons I like Yours Truly is because the main male character has like crippling anxiety, and it's the best like written explanation of anxiety I've ever read. So like, and in the other one, like the one is becoming the caregiver of his siblings because his mom's going to jail for something, like real world problems. But this is the one that probably I think of the three I've read has gone the deepest into the problem outside of the romance. So I would say if you start with this one, don't let it scare you off. I really like Just for the Summer, the one you mentioned.
I will say I follow her on TikTok because she is hilarious.
She's one of the best TikTok authors. Yeah.
And her dogs, Tess and Stuntman Mike.
Mm-hmm.
So funny.
And her dog Mike, the Yorkie.
Yes, the Yorkie Stuntman Mike with the perpetual tongue out. Her daughter's also freaking hilarious. And I just saw that she went through some health issues, so I'm wishing her well. But yeah, no, I like relate to her as a person because she's just like so authentic and real online. So
I was almost more excited to meet her 16-year-old daughter than I was to meet her because of her TikToks.
Yeah. Her daughter's a queen, an icon.
Yeah. Anyway, big fan of her as a human being.
There we go. What about the pacing? How long did it take you to read? I'm going to start because I feel like I'm going to be very negative on this point. I really did not like the pacing in this book. I think this is the major thing that kept me from liking it more, is that it was just so slow and repetitive in some parts to me. Like the same, like that review I read, one of the reasons I read it was because I felt like it was the same cycle of just like longing and depression over and over again. And I just didn't really like reading it that much. I thought, yeah, it was just, it took me a while to get through this book and I didn't read it very quickly.
I read it in two sittings, two large chunks. I think I read her writing pretty quickly usually. It was a little repetitive at some points. I don't know, maybe I related just because my family's been going through some tough stuff lately. So I just enjoyed like seeing how other people deal with things. But yeah, I really had no complaints because it's a quick enough read that I wasn't mad about the few repetitive parts.
So I actually listened to this one on audiobook, which I 10 out of 10 recommend. It's two different voice actors, a man and a woman. So like it's not like one woman doing the voice of a man the entire time. So I very much so appreciated that. And the actors' voices were very calming and soothing. And I listened to it in a day, actually. I was getting some work done, but I didn't have to do a lot of like strenuous work. So I could listen during work. And then after work, I just continued listening on my headphones as I was doing chores. And by the end of the day, it was done. To be fair, I did listen to it on 1.5 speed because that's just my normal. I got it done in like 8 hours or something like that with the 1.5 times speed. So actually, the pacing was very good in an audiobook format for me.
There you go.
And I will say, this book I very much relate to because my uncle passed away due to Alzheimer's. So I've had family members who have dealt with this issue in particular and seen how much of a struggle it is for your own dad to not recognize you and your own, like, not recognize your own wife and stuff like that. So it did hit home for me.
Okay, I was interested for the discussion because I think we've all had an experience before with a family member who has had severe dementia or Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. Which I think is why that was part of the book that the only part I like really remember, to be honest, is I, like, my grandfather forgot all of us as he was aging and had pretty bad dementia.
I almost dreaded picking it up for that reason because I knew it was going to be like a sensitive topic. For me, it was my great grandmother. But I think she handled it really gently and in a really relatable, but not like super triggering way. That may not be how everybody feels about it, but that's how I felt about it.
Yeah.
It was a love letter to people who experienced this.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. And it also didn't shy away from how, like, genuinely hard it can be.
No, I think that's why I liked it so much. Like, a part of me wanted to give it 4 stars, but I was like, honestly, she was just so real in it that I have to give it 5.
There we go. So, would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
I think this would be a great movie, actually.
I saw someone who said it feels like an early 2000s, like, rom-com, like, you know, like, not The Notebook, that's not rom-com, but you know what I mean. Like, it feels like one of those early 2000s romance movies. And I was like, yeah, it kind of does.
To me, this movie has big Hallmark energy.
Really?
Yeah. And so I can see it being a movie. I don't know that I would watch it, but it has that kind of, like, vibe of, like, overcoming extreme circumstances at any odds.
I don't think it's like Hallmark. Yeah, it's not happy enough for Hallmark.
Maybe Hallmark isn't the right word. I'm trying to think of, like,
Netflix.
There we go. Yeah. Okay. So, busy girl rating.
I mean, I have to give it a 5. It was really, really easy listening. So, I guess moral of the story, listen to the audiobook.
Perhaps.
I'm also going to give it a 5 because I had no issues reading it. And if you like romance, I think it's a good romance and it's a great little summer read.
I'll probably stick with a 3. I think it's fine. I struggled to get through it at some parts. I think if romance isn't your genre, there's not really any reason to read it. So, like, I can't really see myself recommending it in the future. I think it's fine if it's, like, there.
Yeah, we're never going to get you on the romance train, but
no.
You didn't hate it.
We'll keep trying, guys.
No need. But okay, that's our spoiler section. So now we're going to get into what actually happens in this rom-com. It tackles so many things like family, but also long distance, which I feel like is increasingly relatable to people, and also financial ruin. So yeah. Let's get into it. Our first question is, what did you think of the quote-unquote meet cute of our two lovebirds, Xavier and Samantha, and their perfect date in the two POVs?
I think their meet cute is very unique. The fact that she goes in to ask about this kitten she found on the side of the road, and he basically tells her that, like, you need to put it down because it has no butthole.
Pooter the cat.
Pooter the cat.
Yeah.
And then she's a social media savant, so she manages to raise enough money to get this kitten butthole surgery and prove him wrong. And then he asks her on a date. I mean, I thought that was cute. It's a cute little way to meet up. And I actually kind of liked hearing both of their POVs, because long distance is just so hard to just hear one POV from. So hearing them both and how they're struggling with long distance, while at the same time Samantha struggling with her, dealing with her mother, not remembering her and having to be her caregiver, and also her whole family dealing with it in their own ways. And then also Xavier dealing with his own struggles with his lack of family and his basically falling in love with her and realizing that this is not going to be easy and he's going to have to make some sacrifices.
I will say, I think all of her books are dual POV, at least the ones I've read are, and I've never minded it. And also, yeah, you give me a meet cute that involves a kitten she's trying to save and a social media manager and a hot, broody, sexy vet that they describe as Resan. Like, it's like she wrote it for me and the rest of book talk I'm in.
Shadow Daddy without shadows.
Yeah, I loved it. And I mean, I don't know. Like, after hearing her talk, I saw echoes of her in, like, everything in this book. So I was like, oh, yeah, she's got me.
Okay, I'm going to be kind of a Grinch.
You hate Pooter?
I do hate Pooter. No. I think it's a dumb name. It annoyed me the whole book. But also, this is sort of a weird niche thing to get hung up on. But, like, I do think a lot of animals that need really intensive surgery like that, it is just very, like, suffering prolonging. And so sometimes when those issues are portrayed super idealized of like, oh, we're going to raise the money and then save the cat's life and it's all going to be great. Sometimes that stuff annoys me because I'm like, you spent $10,000 to give your cat like a super intensive surgery that vets advise you like may not even save their life. Like, I feel like he was like, oh, she was right and everything worked out and she's a savior. And I was like, she actually really didn't think about the fact that she could have just prolonged this animal's suffering for like months and months and months before it would ultimately dying.
He did bring that up, to be fair.
Yeah, he did. But that's part of why it annoyed me that she was like, no, we're going to fix it. And I was like, you well, are.
He brought it up in a crass way because he was already in a pissy mood because of the person.
He did. But that's what I'm saying. It's just like that whole trope of like animal savior, like this is how I'm going to prove I'm a good person, bothers me because I actually think it's like very morally lacking depth to just be like, no, the right thing is to just do the surgery and like we're gonna save her even if this ultimately just ends up giving this animal like pain. So I just really thankfully, didn't like it.
Thankfully Pooter was not in pain.
Yeah, but
the romance, it worked out fine. Okay,
it's like the Hollywood version of this scenario.
It
like,
literally is. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is she's, and it annoys me when people use like that sort of like unrealistic, like at any cost love of animals to be like, that's how you know this person's a good person.
You I'm like, clearly don't spend enough time on TikTok because TikTok will go to war to give a little kitten a butthole or something like
yes.
that.
And I'm going to be honest, I think most of the time it's really short-sighted. Like, I'm not saying we shouldn't save animals' lives, but like, I think we should also be realistic that like, you can't save every animal. Like, they have to be put down sometimes and it's fucking sad and heartbreaking.
It
but
is,
like,
yes, it is sad and heartbreaking in real life. But if I'm going to read a romance novel or a fiction novel, you best believe I will be so pissed if an animal dies in the novel. I don't care if humans die. If an animal dies in a fiction novel, I put it down.
I don't. So anyway, that's like, I don't know. It just like annoyed me. And so I just didn't really connect to the meet cute that much. I was like, oh, I get it, she's a savior, so obviously we're supposed to like her, blah blah blah.
I think the purpose of the meet cute was her defiance and his curmudgeonness.
Yeah,
grumpy sunshine.
I agree.
And all now I know I just need to pull kittens out of my boobs and hot vets will fall for me.
Hot vets that look like resand. Which that reference is so funny to me. That's the first time I've actually seen a quote unquote resand reference in a book where they literally say the word resand from ACOTAR. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my God. And everyone's mentioning it. It's not just her. It's like every, even the side characters are like, you know what he reminds me of? Resand. And I'm like, Jesus Christ.
It's so like great though, because it's very modern. And I think for a while, people will definitely understand that reference.
Yeah, I personally did not mind that. I thought it was fine. And it did make me laugh at some points. But you know what? I saw that over and over again in the one-star reviews that people were so mad about it.
She's a fantasy reader like us, okay?
Yeah.
She reads the fairy smut we read.
Her ideal man is also resand.
Yes, she has admitted that.
It did kind of make me wonder if she needed like special permission to do that. I don't know if you do or not, or if you get in trouble with copyright stuff because of that, but
she might have had to reach out and ask permission.
Because if I was SJM,
I do know she's like,
I would be like, yes.
She's like friends with Rebecca Yarros, so maybe she's friends with SJM. Hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. If I was SJM, that's pretty publicity.
Yeah.
Also, I just want to mention it because I sent girlies earlier, but it was a TikTok that I saw. And it was the book club basically reading this book, Say You'll Remember Me. And just the caption is, this month's read was Say You'll Remember Me. Book club was divided in how we felt about the pop culture references throughout. Vanessa, our host, demands respect on Resand's name. And she just goes on a tangent because some of these girls didn't know who Resand was. And she's like, I don't care if you don't know who he is. You got to put respect on my boyfriend's name. Because if I see him, it's on site. I'm going to jump him. And I'm like, you know, we love a queen that's just like, yeah, yeah.
Honestly, it's shocking to me that anyone in a book club in the year 2025 would not know Resand.
Yeah, that was my thought too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a book club discussion.
Right. Like, even if you haven't read ACOTAR, I would assume that you kind of know the general lore at this point.
Especially because the host is not on BookTok. This is her friend recording her as she goes on this tangent. And so, like, I guess the other people in the group aren't on Book Talk either. Because if you're on Book Talk, you have seen Resand. You have seen the fan edits, the fan casting, all of the, like, you can't avoid it. You can't avoid SJM.
Right. Okay. Anyway, now to bring us back to the questions. So
Catherine said, you do not put heat on Resand's name.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my boyfriend.
Loyal. Yeah. Loyal since day one, Catherine and Reese. Okay. So we've already touched on this a little bit, but the book, one of the biggest parts of it is that Samantha is helping care for her mother who had this accident. And then it basically caused her to have like really serious accelerated early onset dementia. So she is like forgetting Samantha, even though she remembers the other kids, and is at the stage of dementia where she is like very unstable, and it is very difficult to care for her because she has like emotional fits and panic because she can't remember where she is, and she's very sensitive, and like keeps trying to go to work but like can't drive and forgets what she's doing halfway through what she's doing. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty intense, and the dementia was in its advanced stages. What did you guys think?
I mean, I think it's a really realistic portrayal, because when you get to that point where I can only imagine it from their shoes, where you don't even remember where you are, would be very jarring and jostling. And the only people that you remember are not around you, and all of the faces you're seeing, you can't put names to it. And so you can imagine you would be agitated in that situation, and you would probably lash out. I mean, it's a lot like what toddlers do, because toddlers don't know how to say words or express themselves. So they throw tantrums and throw fits because they can't like verbalize that this is what I need, this is what I want. That's why like sign language is really important with kids, is because then they can at least like show what they need and want. And then it's less likely to have those kind of like blow ups. But these like patients, you have to basically like find nonverbal cues, and like family members. And I think it was really heartbreaking, because I understood what the mother meant when she was just like, no, I don't want to go into a home. I want to like pass at home. And it's like a fair ask, but at the same time, it's too much of an ask for your family members. And so I felt really bad for the family, but I understand, because sometimes those homes are just not a good place.
And they're expensive.
They're expensive. They can be abusive. And there have been a lot of cases of that. And there's like cases of neglect and like bed sores and just like not great behavior. But I mean, like my uncle went into one of those homes when my aunt could no longer take care of him by herself. And it was a great home and a great place. And she visited him every day. But sometimes that extra care is needed. And I felt really bad that the family felt so trapped by this, and also like some weren't pulling their weight. And so it was the dad who had to do most of the work and the grandmother. And it was just kind of tragic that the kids, like some of them witnessed it and didn't say anything. Some of them were trying to help, but in their own ways. It was a real raw, realistic example of that.
Yeah, like I said, I think it was gentle in how it did it. The part about the illness itself, I think, was like gently approached. I think the nuance of what it was to be a family member was a lot more the like point of it, and the strain it put on everyone. How it took 5 grown adults living in the same house to take care of one person who was losing their memory. Mm-hmm. Like that's a lot. And like, you know, all the tiny decisions they had to make about scheduling work, finances, keeping her in the home or not, changing diapers eventually. Like, I think I felt the fatigue from reading it, and she did it really well. I think she had a really good understanding of what a lot of families are probably going through without, like, just really honing in on, like, at the beginning, she kind of honed in on my mom is forgetting me, but then kind of moved on to, like, okay, but I love my mom and I want to make sure she has a happy life with what's left, and was kind of working on that. I also do like how she worked in their relationship. A lot of the love story was about making memories. And a lot of the like deeper quotes and things were about like wanting someone who you have this parallel life with, that you share inside jokes and you'll remember these things, and that even if your memory fades, there will be these core moments that you have and like making that, you know, they were both like making it last because they saw how easily it was slipping away. And I just thought that was a really nice way to kind of parallel the romance with the plot.
Yeah. Witnessing someone's life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. I think for me, the part that stuck out was the arguments that the family would have. As like difficult as those scenes were, I thought it was very realistic because mm-hmm. those high stress situations are very difficult to navigate, even in like healthy, loving families. Like those decisions are really hard and there's a lot of weight to them. And it feels very difficult to navigate, even in, again, even in families where like you all love each other and everyone's trying to do the right thing. It can be very difficult. Like I was lucky. I don't know if I would say I was lucky, but actually, I will say I was lucky. So my grandfather, who had dementia and was starting to forget people, he ended up passing sort of right as we started to have those sorts of conversations, because my grandmother had been taking care of him. And we were lucky because my grandmother was still in really, really good shape and was able to do that. But he's a lot bigger than her and a lot taller than her. He was a football player and she's a tiny petite lady and she was 75 too. And so like we just, it got to the point where we were so afraid that he would fall and hurt her. And so, you know, we sort of ended up being spared having to make a decision, but even like thinking about it was really hard because we knew she wanted to keep caring for him. And we were in a position of having to say like, this is scary. And like, we can't put you in a position to be hurt anymore. And it's dangerous for you at this point. So I think that was something that I thought was like really deep and like truthful of just like watching a family really struggle to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like the heartbreaking one was when, and I think we'll get to this, when the grandmother dies and they realize no one fed her because they were all so consumed with doing stuff to make sure the grandmother's body and stuff was taken care of. And mm-hmm. she has this temper tantrum and Xavier's like, did someone feed her? And they all felt so bad. And I like felt that heartbreak for them. And it's like totally understandable how it didn't happen. But at the same time, it's like, oh my God, it's not a pet. Like, also bad if you forget to feed your pet, but like this is a human being who can vocalize that they are hungry and not being fed, but she also can't. She's just like, at that point, it feels more like a pet, which mm-hmm. is terrible. But like, that was like a really powerful little moment.
It's like a toddler. Like,
yeah.
Toddlers, when they're hungry, will cry. And that's kind of what she was just like, I need to go get groceries. We're like low on groceries and everyone's not really understanding because they're taking that at face value. But Xavier, who's a vet and works with animals and has to go purely based off of nonverbal communication, is just like, whenever this kind of thing is happening, it's normally because they're hungry. So I'm going to make that assumption. And Xavier being there, I did like in that love story that he was the rock of their family for that time period and that he was willing to fly all the way down there to help them out during that time period.
To bankrupt himself.
Yeah, bankrupt himself. I definitely like, I get where people are coming from. Like they didn't have like full on heat, passion, chemistry. I think they had like more like deeper like connections than that. Like it's not like passion, but it's more of like understanding and like a growing love. I'm not a huge insta love fan, but I liked how the story, she was pushing back against it and saying like, forget about me. Like it's too complicated. And he kept fighting for her and showing her like, we can make this work. I think it made me believe more in the long distance because of that. And then when he came over for her grandmother after her death and like was there to help the mom, not even just help his girlfriend, he was helping the entire family. Like that's when you know it's true love. It's because it's like, he's willing to like step up and help other people in your family, not just you.
Yeah, I think their love was, as I kind of said, like, is it better to be miserable together long distance or miserable knowing that we met the perfect person and we'll never be with, like, won't be with them? So it's like, which one do you choose? And a lot of the book was just really terrible choices they had to make. And so, you know, they chose, like, I think this is the love of my life and I'll never find anything better. Like, I'll always think of it. So I'm going to suffer through it. And then it was, okay, do I leave my dying mother or do I bankrupt myself and leave my practice? And like, also impossible decisions. So like, the whole book was like that. But you could tell because they were just trying to survive it. It was a deeper, like a bone deep kind of love relationship.
This is where I'm going to be the Grinch again.
Ugh, I know it's unrealistic. Stop.
I did not believe it at all. I was like, sure. Right. Okay. Your family's falling apart. Your family's finances as a collective are in shambles. You have a mom who has like incredibly serious, all-encompassing health issues. Now her primary caretaker has died. And your boyfriend, who you're going to keep on seeing, is running his vet practice in another part of the country. And he is literally going into debt just to see you. I'm sorry, that is crazy.
Working himself into the bone.
You've been on like one or two dates and that is what you do. I was just like, I'm sorry, but no. Like, it was honestly to the point that it was so destructive for them. I'm such a great, I was like, I don't believe in this at all.
And I'm not saying I would make the same decisions as them, but that was the romantic part, which apparently you hate, is that they were willing to sacrifice and make it work.
You're obviously not a hopeless romantic, because I thought
so. No.
here's what I'll tell you, okay? Background story. Abby Jimenez lived in Pasadena with her husband. He had an important job. She was having kids. He lost his job, and they went into, like, very severe finance issues. And she had always wanted to own a bakery, so they took out the largest loan ever when they had no money to open a bakery and put everything in on it. Now it's like a world famous bakery, and she has one location in Pasadena and three or four in Minneapolis, which is why you get these two locations. Right. It is her. She lived this scenario and made it work, and now makes a ton of money off the bakery and books. So like, that's where maybe I appreciated it more, because I know that's like her actual story is kind of what Xavier was dealing with.
Yeah, I think the hang up for me is actually partly on Xavier's part, because like, don't get me wrong,
like the author is Xavier.
Yeah. Well, I think it's one thing to do that with your husband who you're already in love with and who has like, you've proven to each other already.
Yes, they already have like three kids.
Right. Like, you've already proven to each other that you're capable of, you know, being trustworthy with that investment. And, like, you know, you have a lifetime of proving that to each other already. Part of what I think bothered me is that Xavier literally gave up on his dream for her. And yes, he's like, I can open a vet clinic somewhere else. But I was like, don't get me wrong again. I think that like love is more important than money. Okay. I'm not like totally ice queen. I do think ultimately your relationships are more meaningful than like your career. But for someone that you just met,
I totally understand your hangups. But
like I said, would either of any of us make that decision? No. But we're all too realistic for that.
And yes. No, I want to say one more thing. There is a trope that I am going to call the perfect doormat, and this is something that I keep seeing now with the way men are being written in these romance novels. And it's,
I like my men like doormats.
They are not even real people. They do the perfect thing the whole time. They're super engaged with their partner. I feel like Xavier asks almost nothing of Samantha. The relationship is about Samantha. Meanwhile, he is putting a lot on the line for the relationship too. And he's literally just like, but what else can I do for you? I'm here for you. I'm going to run my finances into the ground for you. Like, he just makes every decision for her. And I just think it's like kind of not only unrealistic, but and like not human to me, like not real how humans are, but also just like not really good. Like, that's not really,
it's fiction. That's what the girl wishes the guy would do. He's not gonna do it. It's all romance fiction.
But I don't really wish that's what a guy would do. I just feel like when you're not really a real human and you're just a doormat, like, it's not really good romance anymore. Because that person is just being walked on. Like, they're not real.
I like
like
the
they're
doormat.
Not to me, the best romance is
it's not real. It's a fiction book.
Keep fighting. But fiction, great fiction, makes real life like romantic and makes real life meaningful. The realistic parts of the book are the family.
The gesture
stuff,
that he was willing to give up everything for love. It's like Entangled when he says, "You're my new dream."
Yeah.
That's it.
I would say, here's the thing, is that he is grappling with this the entire time. Like, he's holding desperately on to his vet dream because of his abusive parents. And he's also trying to hold on to this relationship. And the people around him are seeing how miserable he is. And they basically, they don't tell him close the vet clinic and go with her. They say, what makes you happier? Would it be staying in Minneapolis, continuing with this business, or would it be being with her? And he made the decision that it's her and that he can figure out the rest later. I do agree that I don't think the ending is super realistic. And I agree with Caitlin as well that it's a romance novel. But I will say, I kind of wish the ending wasn't as if like, oh, and then Harvey saves the day by like finding a bunch of old guys to run the clinic.
It was unrealistic. Okay.
I know. It was unrealistic. I almost wish he had just closed it or went into financial ruin or something like that. That would have been a little like better. And then like they figured it out from there. But all I'm saying is like, he chose the path for most happiness. And yes, he was a bit of a doormat. I'm okay with it. He at least has chivalry, and that shows chivalry is not dead.
All right. Well, anyway, there are a lot of side characters in this book as well. Most of them are Samantha's family members. What did you guys think of them?
Her brother was pissing me the fuck off.
I wanted to punch her brother.
Yeah, but you always have that one in the family who's going to be like that.
Yeah. He was just so selfish.
He had big emotions, okay?
I was like, how are you going to be in this family watching everyone else do everything they can and you just, like, stay up late playing video games or whatever?
And
like,
then the audacity to be mad at her for blaming him on something or thinking that he did something, like, not locking the door and then be mad at her for 6 months and not talk to her. I'm like, boy.
It was, like, 6 weeks. But also... whatever. He thought his sacrifice was giving up his life at adventure and coming home.
Yeah.
Like, I see how it happened. Yeah, he was put there on purpose to annoy you, but I see, like, he thought his sacrifice was made, you know?
Yeah, ridiculous. Something only a, like, 20-year-old would think. Okay, so... we already kind of talked about this, but what did you think of Xavier being determined to make the relationship work despite financial and distance obstacles?
I mean, like, most of the time I was like, just break up.
Yeah.
That would ruin the romance side of it.
Yeah, I almost wish that it would have been like a time jump, like 10 years later, and it's like post her mom's death and they come back together. Because that would have been more realistic.
That's kind of what I thought would happen. Because the trigger warning said off-screen death. And so I was not expecting
grandma.
No, I thought it was going to be mom. And I was like, oh my God, grandma.
Yeah. No, I thought the same thing. I think that's part of why I'm salty. Is I think to me, the better story is just admitting that sometimes relationships are too hard in the moment. And it's not anyone's fault, and it's heartbreaking sometimes, but like, you know, family comes first. Mm-hmm. And like, that doesn't mean it's a no forever, right? Like, things can happen in the future too, but sometimes the timing is wrong, like, period. And so his like single-minded necessity to force it to work was like actually a little annoying to me. I was like, y'all need to break up, this is crazy.
It was. Yeah. He'd apparently had never had anything good in his life, though, so I could see kind of why. But, like, I personally would have been like, well, this sucks. I met the love of my life, but, like, choosing family, choosing my own stability. Sorry.
Well, especially because...
my, like, priority, not everybody's priority, so...
Mm-hmm. Well, that's especially because, like, we have modern-day technology. You can keep in touch with this person. Mm-hmm. And then when things settle down and life happens because time continues on, maybe you can find your way back to each other or circumstances aren't what they are now. Because like his business, he could have closed it down in the future if her mom continued down this path and lived a really long time, which can happen. But it also could be the case that an accident happens or she deteriorates really quickly. And so I thought that that's what it was going to be like. Say You'll Remember Me would be like a double entendre for like her mother, and then also like waiting for each other and finding each other a second chance. I did kind of like that it wasn't that, because that's predictable. And like, that's like The Notebook essentially, or just like something ridiculous. And so it would be just like totally cookie cutter at that point. But I agree that it wasn't super realistic for him to go into financial and health ruin, where he literally broke down and had to be hospitalized because he was so worn down.
You know what scene really made me mad is when they both tried to surprise each other.
I knew that was
coming. I knew it was coming. I was waiting.
For it the whole time too, and it pissed me off.
That's just a trope.
The money down the drain was so devastating.
I think that was the entire point, was you're supposed to like feel that viscerally. Mm-hmm. But I was like, okay, finally, like they realized like we can't keep doing this visiting thing, and they were kind of just dealing with it until her grandma died.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the grandmother's death,
I guess that was after her grandma died. Never mind.
It was after, yeah.
Mm. Okay. Well, speaking of the grandmother's death, did you guys expect it?
No.
Grandma.
Well, and it's just so sad because you find out that like she had had health problems and she knew about them, like her heart was giving out and she could have had the surgery, but she chose not to because she knew that it would be too much on this family after having to take care of the mother, that taking care of the grandma as well is like just too much of a burden. So she chose her family over her own health. And like,
I hated that,
but like, it is kind of realistic. There are a lot of family members that choose not to undergo cancer treatment because they know how much of a burden it is to their families to take care of them. And they want to like go out living life and being like, when it happens, no intervention, which is unfortunate, but that is like kind of realistic. Like that does happen. And she was the primary caregiver. So she was just like, I got to take care of my daughter because she's going through it. And whatever happens, happens. I hated that the dad was in on it a bit because like, I feel like he should have been more communicative, and obviously he had his own secrets, but he was carrying the burden of both his wife and his mother-in-law, which is just hard.
Yeah. I did think, and it wasn't like I liked it, but I thought it was interesting because when the grandmother is alive, things are really difficult, but they're kind of keeping their heads above water. And her death is literally like what sinks them, because she was doing so much to keep everything together, and it was sort of barely manageable as long as she was there and was able to do that. And so her death just like triggers this like huge explosion of chaos and hardship, essentially, because, you know, they have to figure out who's going to care for their grandmother now. And so I did kind of expect it. But I also more so thought it was going to be the mom. And so I was kind of surprised.
No, that would have been too easy. Surprisingly.
Yeah.
The easy death.
Exactly. So yeah, it was crushing though.
Yeah.
So the other kind of big point that is introduced about them kind of coping is the dad and his affair. What did you guys think of that? You know, was it okay? And obviously we already said he was keeping the grandmother's secret.
I didn't like it, but I understood the plot point, and I know that does happen in real life. And he did feel kind of just like unjustly painted as the villain, because none of them could understand what he was actually going through. And once they kind of realized, like once Samantha started taking over the caregiving, she was like, oh shoot, like this is a lot. And so I liked that in the end they gave him some grace. Like, I still wouldn't like my dad stepping out on my mom because she can't remember him. Like, that's shitty. But I think, like, the characters, I understood. It was just unfortunate, uncomfortable, you know?
I do think I didn't blame him for it. Obviously, like, if this was my family, I would be deeply uncomfortable with the knowledge of what my dad was doing.
Yes.
Like, to be honest, I would not want to know. However, I don't personally even really consider it cheating because truly, for all intents and purposes, it's brutal, but your wife is gone.
Yeah.
You can't even have, I mean, you can't have like a friendship really with her anymore because her personality is gone. You also can't have a sexual relationship with her anymore because she's not able to consent. So it's like that, you know, sticking around and caring for her, I think, is what you owe your partner. But I also understand why, like, you are effectively like not really married anymore.
Well, like, clearly his family wasn't, because they didn't understand, they weren't meeting his needs for like socialization and love either. They were all fighting their own battles. So, like, I understood why he sought that somewhere else.
Yeah.
Though leaving between 10 and 2 every night, I'm like, dude, these are, you're going for prostitutes.
Yeah.
Well, I was like, ew.
No self-respecting woman is meeting you every night at midnight.
Well, and it seems like he leaves it. He doesn't talk details, so we don't totally know the situation. Right. We don't know if it's one woman or multiple women, or if he's just going out on dates, or he's just like meeting up with gym buddies. Like, we don't even know if it's truly a woman. He's just kind of saying like, hey, I need my own time to process this and to be outside of this. I appreciated the dad, like, he didn't like deny it, but he also was just kind of like, I'm going to keep this separate from y'all. Like, he's not bringing the mistress in or anything like that. He's not bringing this person around. He's just taking his own time away because he's so consumed by his, what he thought was his person's losing that with her and like him, like her barely remembering him and feeling so needy and needed, like needs him so much. And I definitely, like, I'm glad he kind of like snapped at the kids and was like, you just don't know. Like, you get to do the fun parts of this, but you never get to see the hard parts of it. And it's about damn time that you learn that there's hard parts, because I'm done. Like, let's talk about putting her into a nursing home, because this is not sustainable anymore, because your grandma was 50% of this work and I'm the other 50. Like, I can't do 100. And so I think that was like a good catalyst for that conversation. And like, I can't blame him. Like, that does happen in these kind of situations. I mean, I think I read a statistic somewhere like that you're most likely to get divorced when you get a cancer diagnosis. Like, the partner will leave the other partner because if it's like a terminal cancer diagnosis.
Which is upsetting. Yeah. For a different reason.
Yes. No loyalty from these hoes.
Yeah.
They could use a dose of Xavier.
Yes.
Okay, so Xavier has his own very challenging family relationships. They're more periphery to the book because they're not in his life. They were emotionally, and it seems like his father was sometimes physically abusive, and were very like manipulative narcissists. So what did you think of that portrayal and, you know, ultimately his decision to sort of give up on his dream on behalf of Samantha, because part of that was kind of being like a fuck you to his parents.
I mean, I hated it for him because I always want to stick it to the man, but right. I'm glad he chose happiness over like being miserable trying to prove his parents wrong.
Right. Like, you can't live your life on revenge, even though that might be fun sometimes.
I'm also glad he had friends and like people around him that were very supportive. So like, he may not have had parents, but he had family and outside of just Samantha's family, which I think is important. And they were telling him, hey, like, if you love her, go get her. Like, it's not the end of the world to have this vet clinic close. And like, even like, his mentor essentially was telling him like, hey, like, I had two clinics closed before and it was because of like, they weren't financially stable. Like, this wasn't because of long distance. Like, you have a real reason to like, just pick up and leave. And he was giving him the grace to say like, hey, it's okay to like end this now. And like, I mean, it's cute that like the old guys came in and helped him out, but
not unrealistic. But yeah.
Cute though.
He did. So the one part I liked about Xavier kind of leaving was that one conversation he had with the old man, because this is like such a weird niche part of the book, but I think it's very taboo to discuss failed businesses, even though most entrepreneurs have one or two failed businesses before they ultimately have a successful business. And I sort of appreciated the empathetic portrayal of that just like, having a failed business doesn't make you a failure. Like, it really can happen. It's really hard to be an entrepreneur. And so I thought that was the one point of his whole journey back to Samantha that I thought was like realistic and like empathetic. And I kind of like liked it and related to it in like a, yeah, that makes sense kind of way.
So they say like 50% of small businesses fail in the first year.
I think yeah, something like that, if not higher.
It's making it to year three is almost impossible. Like almost all businesses. I used to report on entrepreneurship, so I know a lot of random business stuff. But yeah, they call years one through three in the business world Death Valley because those are the hardest years to make it through.
Well, and he was on year what, like two in this book?
Yeah. Okay. So what about the ending? We've kind of touched on it. This like cohort of old vets financially saves Xavier and he gets to go and be with his love and contribute and be
and
part of her
married.
Family.
Married.
And they get married.
Oh. Okay, here's the other thing. The car written into the book was Abby's high school car.
I
she had
tell.
Like a love of this car. That's why it was like a character itself in the book. But I did love that last scene of them like literally riding into the sunset while Xavier is like back home taking care of them all. It was really cute in a like perfect happy ending kind of way.
Right. Also, you know what? I'll say one last thing for Xavier because I have shit on him. I do think it's nice to see a man who wants to be a caretaker and a caregiver. I think we very rarely see men in that role. And so I did appreciate watching him do things that we just traditionally think of women doing and expect women to do.
I did sort of thought that she was going to end up taking that Frito-Lay job and he was just going to come be like a stay-at-home caregiver.
I thought
that's where I thought it was going for yeah. a second. And I was like, nah, that would defeat the whole purpose. So
I guess we never talked about what y'all think of mustard.
I think it's funny. She does this too in other books, which is so silly now that I think about it. Just for the Summer has this Toilet King advertisement that plays a really big deal in the book.
That's so bizarre.
She also always writes in her own cupcake brand. Nadia Cakes always makes an appearance.
I figure. Yeah.
As it should. Get your bag, queen.
Yeah.
But yeah, I honestly kind of liked it because like we all work in the journalism world, which is sort of like holding hands with like the funny Twitter business account universe. Mm-hmm. And so it was sort of exactly. I feel like it was sort of funny because I don't know. I like we went to college with the kind of people who are working those jobs now. So it was sort of funny.
Yeah, I know.
Running
the
Wendy's account, trolling people. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that her first job was Wendy's trolling, and then that's how she got the mustard job.
I know, like, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, yep, that's pretty journalism school accurate, honestly.
Yep. And getting laid off, so upsetting, but yeah.
Yeah.
Also journalism world accurate.
Yeah, so accurate. So the journalism
yes.
world. We are struggling out here.
Yep. Yep. Okay, well, I think that's the end. Do you guys have book recommendations?
I've already mentioned this author, but Emily Henry, and I'm going to recommend her book Happy Place because I think it has similar themes of like, not because like it's second chance romance instead, but it's like families and different times and work and being long distance and whether or not it works.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to recommend a movie. So I just want to trigger warning. It's a documentary, and the documentarian, it's her kind of filming her dad's dementia. And they do, it's sort of an interesting concept. It's like she films him and all these like super outlandish like possible endings that he has, like, so the movie is called Dick Johnson Is Dead, and so they film all these like super funny like outlandish like endings for him almost as like a catharsis against what will like likely be his slow decline. And so it is like heartbreaking. So just like trigger warning going in, like if you've experienced that with a relative, it can be kind of hard to watch, but it was really, really good, I think, at showing the progression of dementia. And there are some scenes in that movie that I still think about today. So if you're interested in that thematically, this is kind of another example of a family trying to deal with the diagnosis and care for their family member as the disease progresses.
I'm going to go less depressing.
Yeah, sorry. It's sad.
I will recommend Yours Truly by Abby Jimenez. Just because I like, if you want to get into more of her books, I like that one because as an anxious girly, I thought it was really well portrayed, the anxiety that this character is struggling with and how, like, in a relationship, you can adapt to support someone with that. And I don't know, it was a little slightly less depressing than this one.
Every time someone says anxiety now, I think of the Dochi song.
Yeah.
That gives me more anxiety, honestly.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's our discussion. Please rate and review our podcast. Also, please engage with us online. We'd love to hear more about what you think. We're just three girls with microphones, so you can totally disagree with us. Like, we've got no real reason to be to be the overlording opinions of the book world. So yeah, you can slide into our DMs at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere. We also have a website, busygirlspod.com.
Yeah, come at Casey for her lack of romance.
My absolute hatred of the romance genre.
Yes.
Yeah. Casey is single, y'all. No.
We all are. Don't even.
Yeah. Just kidding. Yeah. Casey has had more relationships than me and Catherine combined. So.
Yes.
Oops.
Okay.
Oops.
Anyway, moving on. I think that ends our discussion. I'm Catherine.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Caitlin. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.